People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
This past August, Dr. Lisa Sturtevant was named Executive Director of the Center for Housing Policy, the research division of the National Housing Conference. Today, she's our guest on the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing. Prior to assuming her new role, Lisa was Deputy Director at George Mason University's Center for Regional Analysis and an Associate Research Professor with GMU's School of Public Policy. In addition to her research and teaching, Dr. Sturtevant has published articles in numerous influential publications. She directs the center and will also serve as NHC's Vice President for Research. Lisa Sturtevant, welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast.
Well, thanks so much.
How did you become interested in housing research?
Well, I think I became interested in housing maybe for a lot of the same reasons that others get interested in housing. You know, we all choose our housing situations. We all face that decision about where to live and what to rent and when to buy. And so I was making some of these decisions, particularly about home ownership, and I was struck by how my decisions about where to live and what kind of housing to choose were really quite different than some of my friends. We all looked sort of demographically the same, but where I was choosing to live in the city, they were moving out to the suburbs. And so I got interested in the factors that affect how people make their choices about where to live. And, you know, in some cases it's a restricted choice, right? Because, you know, you have income constraints that restrict the choices that you have. But I was really curious about the drivers of housing choice. And so I ended up doing my dissertation on the residential location choices of recent immigrants, because I was struck by the number of new immigrants that were moving to the suburbs, particularly in Washington, D.C. So it was really sort of a personal experience as well as some overarching demographic trends that I was seeing in the region that I lived.
It's so fascinating because I would think the bulk of the people have very little choice, right? When you look clear across society, that there are fewer and fewer choices as income levels go down and down. No?
Absolutely. And that's what I started out not understanding the full restrictions that, you know, there were as you looked lower down the income scale. And then to understand how those restrictions in choice affect so many other components of people's and families' lives, you know, that's when I really got interested in how public policy and how policy decisions that either open up or further restrict choice to lower income folks is really so important.
A lot of your research at GMU was focused on housing demographics, economic development, and planning. What were some of your most important findings there?
Well, one of the things that I got to do at George Mason that I thought was so important was to talk about housing and housing needs maybe in a way that was different than how affordable housing gets talked about in other circles. And what I mean by that was, you know, we sort of engage people on affordable housing issues sometimes in the same kinds of ways. And we frankly engage sometimes the same kinds of people in talking about affordable housing needs. And so I had the opportunity to raise the issue of housing needs in the context of how a region's economy develops and how the availability of housing intersects with transportation issues in the Washington, D.C. area in particular. And so what I got to do was to talk about housing, frankly, with a bunch of folks who maybe had never been at a table where affordable housing was the topic. And I'm talking about chambers of commerce and local economic development professionals and people who worked on regional transportation issues. And it was so interesting to do research that helped people outside the traditional housing community understand the importance of housing and how it intersected with the things that that they cared about. So I did a lot of really, I had a chance to work on, I think, a really interesting angle on how to talk about housing needs and how to document housing needs from an economic angle. Because, you know, there are folks who think about housing as a social issue, and it will always be either a social justice issue or a fairness issue. But there are some people who are not going to meet you there when you want to talk about housing needs. So to be able to talk about housing needs from an economic angle, I thought was a really important effort.
It's really groundbreaking. And when you think what we've learned at Eden, of course, is that affordable housing can only be so successful if those other supportive services aren't there, if there isn't adequate public transportation, if there aren't other means of job training and childcare and, you know, other kinds of supportive services. How will your findings dictate your focus in your work at the Center for Housing Policy?
Yeah, no, I think that one of the things I was most excited about when I came to the Center for Housing Policy is there really is this effort to talk about housing comprehensively and to broaden the base of understanding about housing needs and about housing solutions. And so I think this this opportunities to work with different sets of stakeholders who you can bring together to really think about how housing intersects with access to transportation, how housing availability intersects with access to jobs, measures of well-being in terms of health and child outcomes. So this idea to talk broadly about housing was really appealing to me. You know, my background, I did a lot of work, that wasn't housing related. I did a lot of work on economic development issues and on workforce development issues, but you can't talk about those things. You can't talk about people finding work successfully or building family wealth or finding, having a sustainable place in their community without talking about where they live and how they find housing. So this chance to take this research that really looked at housing broadly with different partners, I think that's one of the things that we can do here at the National Housing Conference is really bring folks outside maybe the traditional housing community into the conversation about housing to make the voice more powerful when it comes to housing needs.
Lisa, a great deal of your work focused on the D.C. area, as you said. Were there some specific housing solutions that worked in Washington, D.C. that might be applicable elsewhere?
I think the Washington, D.C. metro area is a great case study for housing. And frankly, one of the reasons I was so excited to come to the center was to be able to learn more about successful programs across the country. And what I found is there's a lot of good practice here in the Washington, D.C. area that places around the country are looking to. One of the things we've got going for us here is we've got sort of three states, right, with three different political environments. We have Virginia, the District, and Maryland. So there's a lot of variety in what localities in particular can do when it comes to meeting housing needs. We have a long history of programs here in the Washington, D.C. metro area. I'm thinking particularly of Montgomery County, Maryland's Inclusionary Housing Program, which, of course, was among the first programs and one of the most often cited successful programs of inclusionary zoning. I think on the Virginia side, what Fairfax County, Virginia has been doing to promote affordable housing around transit investments with the introduction of Metrorail in Tysons really serves as a model for how other jurisdictions may encourage or require affordable housing when transit goes in. Now, what I will say is, in many ways, the Washington region, though, is quite different. For a very long time, we were a very strong job center. We had very high incomes here. There were resources for housing in ways that maybe there weren't in other places. So you always have to be careful about generalizing from one place to another. But I think the lessons learned here in D.C. are really ones that I'm looking forward to sharing with other folks as I have a chance to go out and talk to people.
Tell us a little bit more about the Center for Housing Policy and your goals in this new role.
The Center for Housing Policy is, as you mentioned, the research division of the National Housing Conference. And, so we're researchers. And, I said that coming in. I'm a researcher, and I'm interested in answering the questions that will help decision makers make decisions. And I think that that's one of the core goals of the Center for Housing Policy is to conduct applied research and disseminate it and get it out to people in a way that they can use it. So that's one of the main goals. We don't want to do research for research's sake, to write a report and have it be on the shelf. But instead, you know, we want to do research that someone can use when they're saying, go to the state legislature to lobby for a particular policy change. Or we want to do a piece on the benefits of mixed income development that somebody can use and understand and take to a planning commission meeting, for example. So one of our goals really is to do research for action. So this idea of doing analysis, collecting data, and doing research that can help people increase the availability of housing on the ground. So we do that by looking at different ways to talk about housing needs. We have a couple annual publications, one's called Housing Landscape and one's called Paycheck to Paycheck, that really document the housing affordability challenges across the country. We tend to focus on the state and metro area level, which is because metro areas and states are, you know, quite different across the country. And that just allows folks to understand the landscape of housing affordability and to give them some language to talk about what the housing cost burdens that folks face, what that means for their local community. And then the other big part of our work is really to help to develop effective solutions to those challenges. And we like to conduct this, you know, what we call this evidence-based policy solutions. So figuring out from the research, either research we do ourselves, but mostly research that we synthesize that others have done, that shows, you know, what's worked. When you think about, for example, the challenges of providing housing to an aging population in a community, you know, where are there places around the country where there have been programs that have been demonstrated to be successful? And so we assess the research and then we lift up those best practices. And so I think, you know, those are sort of the two, you know, primary goals that we have, is to help folks understand how to talk about housing challenges and then to use research to help develop effective solutions to meeting those challenges.
Are there any studies that are in the works right now that are particularly exciting to you?
Well, we're doing lots of really exciting stuff. There's always something going on. So we just recently completed a case study analysis of programs that provide home and community-based services to an aging population by looking at communities in urban areas, in suburban areas, and in rural areas, because the context really matters. And so that's really been something that we're been excited about, and frankly, that we're going to do more work on. As you are well aware, the population is aging, and as over the next couple of decades, the housing needs for older adults is going to be significant. And so we need to better understand what those needs are going to be and how we can adequately address those needs, frankly, both on the housing side and the health side. I think that that's, you know, one of the things that we're interested in doing more work on, is to understand how the housing and health communities can work together to provide more efficient and effective supports to an aging population.
Well, it's becoming increasingly clear that everything is inextricably linked, right? One's housing, one's transportation needs, one's health care, the whole ball of wax. It's all one integrated situation.
Without a doubt. And I think there's this sense that people are coming to that understanding. I think on the health and housing side in particular, I was out at the Housing California conference actually last week, learning about programs in Los Angeles County and in San Francisco, how the health departments were working with nonprofit housing developers to coordinate health services and housing services. And, you know, and it used to be there were these, there still are, but these silos where, you know, health had their pot of money, housing had their pot of money. But there's really this movement to, you know, sort of to have the money go, the resources go where the work can be most effective. And as you all know, the, you know, housing, having stable housing is such a critical element to, you know, good health outcomes, that having housing as part of a health strategy is actually something I think we're going to see more and more about. So, you know, that's one of the areas that we're looking ahead towards. Currently, though, we're doing a lot of work on the other issue you mentioned on, you know, the housing and transportation link. I think that's critically important. We, a few years ago, put out a report called Losing Ground, which looked at the combined housing plus transportation costs in metro areas around the country, really to highlight that this issue, frankly, that we all know, right? When housing, when you move further from the city, housing gets cheaper, but transportation costs go up, and having people, you know, documenting that so people can understand that is something that we think is really important. And we're trying to understand better how to talk about housing and transportation and the environmental impact, frankly, of having housing further and further away from jobs. And then, again, introducing evidence-based programs, successful programs that have worked to produce affordable housing closer to transit and closer to jobs to solve that problem of this rising housing plus transportation costs.
It's very exciting work. You said you were recently attended the Housing California conference, and that tells us that you must be aware about the demise of redevelopment and how out here in California, we're struggling to advocate for other sources of funding for affordable housing. Are there specific areas where your previous research or your work with the center might help make that case?
I think that one thing that's really important to keep in mind as folks are making the case for housing resources is what we know about housing as a platform for other positive individual and family and community outcomes. So when we talk about housing, just housing needs, and we limit the conversation to shelter, it doesn't always resonate with the folks who are making decisions about where to put resources. But when you start using the research, and we have a lot of this synthesized in what I think are really easy to read briefs on our website, but if you start talking about what the research says about how stable housing has a positive impact on child outcomes and on educational achievement, for example, all of a sudden you've brought another reason why policymakers should be aware of and should care about sufficient resources for housing. Or if you're able to demonstrate how affordable housing and safe housing leads to better mental health outcomes for adults and children. Well, there you have another constituency who can help you make the case for the needs for housing. Similarly with how housing can be a source of economic self-sufficiency and wealth creation. And so all of a sudden you've got all these range of benefits that come from having safe and affordable and stable housing. And I think if you make the case across these intersections using lots of data and information, but using the research that we've put together, I think that's one really important way to go. I'll mention one other argument, and we're doing more and more of this now, and you alluded to it earlier. If we can make the case that investing in housing now can save money later, you know, all of a sudden you've got folks thinking about budgets like that. So there's research, you know, that talks about how investing in housing for homeless people can reduce healthcare costs at the other end. You can actually demonstrate that there's a bottom line reason for investing in housing early on. And I think that's also resonates with folks who are making budget decisions.
And it's so interesting because the political climate really matters when you're trying to figure out a strategy. Like, for instance, California's governor is particularly interested in education. So it might make sense right now for affordable housing advocates to really make the point and stress the point that stable shelter improves outcomes.
No, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. I think there's so much information out there, and I think understanding who you're talking to and who you're trying to convince is so important. And I think, you know, what I'd like to think we do here at the center is to provide those resources and tailored in such a way that you can have those talking points that you need, depending on what constituency you're trying to persuade.
As advocates, Lisa, we often try to tell our story in ways that convince people, but sometimes we're not successful. So any thoughts or tips on how we might translate research into a compelling narrative in order to generate more support for housing?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think a lot of people think research and they think statistics and they think numbers and they think, oh, this is going to be boring. And as an aside, I teach statistics still at George Mason in the evenings, and it's a required class for my students. And, you know, 9 out of 10 of them are dreading being there because they don't understand what it means to them. So I would argue that if you have data or you have research, it needs to be meaningful to the person you're talking to. You need to make it so that they can relate to it. And one example I'll mention is As I said earlier, we produce every year a publication and an online tool called Paycheck to Paycheck. And it's a way to talk about housing affordability a little bit differently maybe than some other reports do. It allows you to look at different metro areas, and it allows you to look at people in 76 different occupations in your metro area. So instead of talking about, you know, area median income or fair market rents, it says, look, I live in this region. You know, how much does a retail salesperson or a teacher or a bus driver or a mechanic, how much does a person that I might interact with in my community, how much do they earn? How much does housing cost? And how able or unable are they to afford to live in my community? So if you make it about particular people as opposed to just numbers or income levels, I think you get much more effective in telling your story. Now, don't get me wrong, it's still data and it's still objective. I think that's another thing that I think is really important, is that sometimes you can bring research and data to the table and present it in a way that is objective, so you can get everybody on the same page. And if you do it right, you know, nobody can convince you of trying to, you know, twist the numbers. It allows you to have a starting place to talk about the issues.
So it's really about humanizing the story, making it relatable, and really thinking about who your audience is. I think so often we forget to tailor our message to the particular audience.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And I've been learning an awful lot here at the National Housing Conference from our communications director about how to communicate. And I honestly think that the communicating piece of research is just as, if not more important than the research part of research, right? If you aren't able to share the information in a way that helps people persuade or convince or inform, then what's the point in doing it? And so that's one of the things that we really focus on here at the National Housing Conference.
Well, you're a great communicator, and we would love to invite you back when you complete your next round of work. Are you willing to come back on the show?
I would love that. We have so much neat stuff going on, and so any chance I can have to talk about it, would love to do so.
Excellent.
And in the interim, we have all this great research and data on our website at nhc.org, so I hope folks will have a chance to check it out.
nhc.org. Thanks so much for your time and your insights today, Lisa.
Thank you.
Dr. Lisa Sturtevant, Executive Director of the Center for Housing Policy, the Research Division of the National Housing Conference. I'm Joanne Green. The Affordable Housing Podcast is free on iTunes, and we'd love to hear your feedback. So could you please post an honest review there? For more information or to review our archives of past episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast, please visit edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.